Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations with Sapphire J. Blue. I am Sapphire J. Blue, and today I am with the wonderful, wonderful author, Sandra Hall, again. And I'm just blessed to have her back. Author Sandra Hall, welcome.
Thank you. How are you doing?
I am doing good. I'm doing good. We've had some snowy weather here in New York, and it has thrown my schedule and my life a little array. But I'm trying to do the best with it.
Okay.
The author and I were talking before the show, and I was just telling her how much I love her Westerns. This is the second Western that I've read from her, and I can say that I am a huge Beverly Jenkins fan. And because I am, I love the historical books, and I love the way this author talks about the history. She goes into the history. She goes into the whole life of these Westerners and these cowboys. And they are cowboys of color. And the different things that they face, I love it. In a part of the book, she had a gangster kind of like guy, a gambler, that's what he was,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, a white woman. And the woman said to him, you know, you think you're this, you think you're all of that, but remember, she was basically saying, I'm
mm-hmm.
white.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whatever I say is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when he decided to get rid of her, because he was like, you're going to
mm-hmm.
throw that in my face? If you're going
right.
to throw it in my face, then you can keep it moving. And she was like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, but she did mean it.
Mm-hmm.
She did mean it. And when you pull the race card,
mm-hmm.
it's all over. Now, we started off a couple of months ago with Once an Outlaw, and this is a continuation of the Outlaw series. And I had asked the author why. I love her romances. I loved Magic Moons, but why did you stop writing the historical books?
Why did I start? I write about things that are of interest to me, and Westerns have always
mm-hmm.
been of interest to me, you know. Except for, as you said, Beverly Jenkins, you really didn't get very much of, you know, the Western life, you know, from my point of view. You know, most people think we didn't do anything, that we were just serving other people, you know, or living in the backwoods trying to hide or whatever. But historically, you know, if you know your history somewhat, you know that a lot of the famous bandits and lawmen, they were black people and other people of color. And there were a lot of things we did. I mean, everything you see that was being done in the movies or written in books, we were doing it too, just as much as the other people. You would think that there were no Indians hardly anymore, that they were out hiding somewhere too. Well, you know, a lot of them were killed out and all that, but they were still out there living some kind of way as best they could, just as we were. And but anyway, and when you did see them in the movies or referred to in the book, they were just, you know, in and out characters who didn't have a story. You didn't know any kind of life they had. And so I was thinking to myself, girl, go ahead and go for this kind of stuff. You know, write it. You know, Beverly Jenkins did a great job. You know, historically, she, you know, you get like a lesson out of it as well as a love story and all that. And, yeah, so I was like, if I write something, I want to try that and see, you know, if anyone would want to read it or not, you know. And I'm like, I think there's room for me as well as Beverly Jenkins. See, I'll put my name with Derrick Hurst a little bit, see.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. There's room. There's a couple of other authors that are dabbling in it also that are doing Westerns. I think, I can't think of her name right now, but there's like two other authors that I know of. And there's probably more. I just don't know about them.
Right.
That have been dabbling in the whole Westerns and black history and or African American, as people say. But what it is letting people know. And that's what we want. We want people to know that we were more than just African American slaves.
Right.
We gave more to this country. We gave more to society. We were better.
We've always been
when
an interesting
people.
When you
read your history, we helped build that railroad. We helped do so much. And because we did this, you know, we don't get the credit for it. But when you go back in your history and you go back with all these things, you see that we did a lot. And I love it that authors bring it out and let us know, you know, hey, this is what we did. We love. Yes, we know how to love. We know how to work. We are sheriffs. We are teachers. So many of the women that were educated.
Oh, yeah.
And so many of them learned how to read. Believe it or not, a lot of the slave masters taught the women how to read or had the women in their homes know how to read. Because what happened, I hate to say it, the men died. And the women had to take over the farm. And they needed somebody to help them, or another man would come and take it away from them. And those farms were in their family for a long time. So what they did is they made sure that one of the black men knew how to read, who they trusted, and they made sure usually his wife knows how to read. So that this way, it was a couple. They knew how to read. They could help her out. They could help her keep her land and her money. Because if not, what happened is another man came along and took it from them.
And took it,
But if she showed that she could do it on her own, she could keep it. And we were there. We were important. We made a difference. And that's what our children need to know, that we were just not tied to a tree and, you know, made to think we were not just running around uneducated and nothing.
Right.
We were lawmen. We had businesses. A lot of those slave owners, when they left money. a lot of them gave money to the people who, after slavery, a lot of the farms couldn't last because people left.
Mm-hmm.
So the slave owners had to really pay the black people to stay, or they gave them some of their land. They gave them money to help them.
Mm-hmm.
So we had money. We worked. We were good workers. People wanted to hire you.
Right.
Oh, you worked on this farm? You worked on this? You worked on that?
And when you look back, yeah. And when you look back in history at the contributions, like, you know, we invented, you know, the iron board, three-way stop sign or whatever. You know, a lot of these people came out of slavery. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And they were educated in some form or fashion. Some could not read, like, for instance, Vassar Reeves, that sheriff, he's a black U.S. Marshal. And a lot of people believe that he was the pattern for the Lone Ranger, okay? And reading his history, I could see why they would say that. But he couldn't read.
Mm-hmm.
But he only lost, out of all the, I think it was like 30 years he was a lawman, he only lost one person that he was supposed to bring in. And he would be very clever, like the Lone Ranger. He would don these disguises, pretend to be someone else in order to get close to these people, you know. And to say that we didn't have the smarts to do different things other than just working on a farm or building something for someone, we were doing it all. We were writing newspapers, you know, spreading them across the country. We were doing everything everyone else was doing. And I think that a lot of history wants us to forget all of it. Well, not history, but a lot of people want us to forget that and to think that until the last, 100 years or so, we weren't doing anything, which is a fallacy, you know. So, yeah.
I had heard that the Lone Ranger was black.
Yeah. And they based
his
him on.
His friend was Indian and or Native American.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Back then, you didn't have natives running around with white men.
They were mainly running around with black people. At least in a certain part in history. And even now, you see so many black people who, even now on the reservations or in places on the fringes of the reservation, there are Native American and black people who have merged to become, you know, they're black Indians, you might as well say. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on from hundreds of years that way, you know.
We
and
have it
a lot of
in
people,
my family, on on my mother's side, my father's side, my mother's father's side, and my mother's. On all, I'm in it. I don't have enough to be full-fledged, but I have a quarter.
Yeah.
In my family, in my mother's family, my great-grandmother was a Cherokee Indian who married a son of a slave.
Yeah.
And
a lot
her family didn't agree with it, and she was kicked off the reservation for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, now,
go ahead.
But see, now, there were a lot of instances in which when slavery was still going on, quite a bit, it happened. It wasn't unusual for slaves to run off and be taken in by Indian tribes.
Yes.
And, you know, and they married into the families. You know, you would have a different status, but basically you still had a regular, like you were, you know, they might actually call you a slave, but you had a regular life. You were able to marry into different families, you know. It happened quite a bit. I mean, every slave who ran away, they wasn't going to the north. Some just ended up joining a tribe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I wasn't really aware of that, until, you know, I started looking at different, you know, I was seeing photographs. I'm going like, this guy looks like an Indian, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I go look him up. I go like, yeah, he was part Native American, you know. So, yeah, it's just, you know, the history is so varied that, you know, a lot of people just want to put us in just one little cubby hole and say, oh, that was it. It was so much more. We've influenced so much life in this country that it's amazing. And, you know, and a lot of people want to say, well, oh, they're just descendants of slaves. Well, yeah, you were descendants of slaves, but so what? Those slaves were, and to say you were a slave, that's not, I mean, to me, Most people, they say a slave is derogatory or it means you didn't have any value. That's crap, you know. You know, when you go back and look at it, come on now. These people, and we're still here. Come on.
Right.
We did what we had to do, whether it was mixing with, you know, the natives or running to form our own societies and communities. We did what we had to do.
And we had lots of towns, and we had lots of money. One thing that we had that was really, people don't realize, we had the ways to make the alcohol. We had the ways to be the alcohol, to bring the alcohol. And that's why we could run the saloons. That's why we could run the saloons. That's why we could do what we had to do, because we had the way to make the alcohol, especially the moonshine, the bootleg alcohol. People dealt with us better because they trusted us more.
Yeah, that's the truth.
We were trustworthy people. And you show us that in your book, because you have two women own a saloon.
Yep. That's what a lot of women had to do back then who didn't have men. And, you know, it's something interesting that I, you know, in reading different things about what the ladies in the West had to do, black and white, they would become madams, you know. They would put advertisements out, women from all over. It would be like, you know, the same as if you put an ad in the paper that you're looking for a school teacher. You know, they put ads out that they needed women to work in saloons. And usually when they met for you to join a bordello, you know. And and for a while, someone who worked in a bordello, she wasn't looked down on. She was there for a reason, you know. And I was like, what? I saw that in a Western show, and I said, no, they just saying, you know, taking license with that. But as I was reading about women and the things they did to remain independent, prostitution was one of them, and they went on to become leading ladies in the society. You know, I mean, people might, you know, talk about, well, she's a prostitute, but she was a society lady. They walked around, you know, like Miss Kitty on Gunsmoke. She was actually, her character was based on different women from back in those days who ended up, you know, actually on Gunsmoke, if you read between the lines, Miss Kitty, she wasn't exactly, a pure woman. She ran a saloon, and there were rooms upstairs. So Miss Kitty, but she was considered an upstanding woman of the community.
You know, and why she was considered upstanding? Because those women, like Miss Kitty, what they did is they ran the town. Because not for nothing, men need alcohol and men need women. So when you need all these things, you have to have a woman. And people trust women. Look how the men trust women because they figure a woman's not going to cheat me. Number one. Number two, we see in all the Westerns, and we even see it in your book, the bed pillow talk. When you have the pillow talk, and the pillow talk is going along, women do that. Women do that. So we have, as we go through the story, we are back with Cain. We're back with Veronica. We have some new characters here, Maureen. We have Macrame. Is that how we're saying his name?
No, McCabe.
McCabe.
Yeah.
We have McCabe. We have Brad back.
Uh-huh.
We have Janice back.
Mm-hmm.
Molly,
mm-hmm.
her sister.
Mm-hmm.
We have these characters. And we have a lot going on because we have people who have been together for a long time, people who are know each other.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have people who, as we can say, there's some back beef.
Yeah, yep.
Because just like in life, I hate to say it, everyone knows everyone. Everyone has slept with everyone. Everyone has done this. Everyone has done that. So when you have all these things, you're bound to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
Cain said to Brad, Janice never left me. You
mm-hmm.
know, when you have people say that to you, you know there's a history there.
Mm-hmm.
When you have Veronica and Janice go into town, and then the next thing you know, people are saying rumors. She must be sleeping with this one. She must be sleeping with that. Where's your woman? La la la. All these kind of things are going on. And when you have all these things, you're bound, so bound to have little problems. So tell me, when you were writing a story, the part two,
mm-hmm.
and we have from the beginning Cain getting to this battle of this grudge that carries us through the whole book, tell us about it.
Okay, you mean with McCabe?
Yes.
Or Brad? Okay, with McCabe, okay. Well, it just started with Cain seeing McCabe. He doesn't trust him in the first place. McCabe does something terrible. I mean, he and Cain, you know, they got involved in a fist fight. Cain knocked him out and all that. But before he did all that, he actually hit a woman. And, you know, Cain is the type of man, you know, you don't hit a woman, not in front of him, and
mm-hmm.
get away with it, or mistreat a woman and get away with it, period. So he was going to run him out of town anyway. You know, Cain already has an agenda. Plus, he had like a, what you call it, a itch on his back, or what we want to call it. And
yes.
So he was already ready to go at McCabe anyway. So in the fight, McCabe, he loses. Cain puts him in jail, sends him on his way. But he ends up losing four teeth. And that's the main thing that McCabe, he hated it. He took, you know, he was a man who was prideful of his looks. And
he said, he mm-hmm. said he messed up my face and he mm-hmm. threw it in my face.
Uh-huh, right. And he just couldn't let it go, you know, like Cain said. You got in a fight, you got the worst of it, let it go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he could not do that. He had, you know, Cain told him. No, Mark told him, be smart.
Mark told him, let it go.
And don't come back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, he's a man who's not going to listen because he's so smart, you know. He actually thought he was smarter than everyone else that he came across. He's a smart, wily man and all that, but, you know, he wasn't truly all that he thought he was when he came up against that town. He thought that town was going to be just an easy mark, you know. I can
yes.
come in and do whatever I want. But, you know, when he got in there, you know, even with his gang, you know, those were people to be reckoned with, you know, to a certain extent. As things went on, you know, there were things where he was. See, he thought, and also, too, he thought that revenge was a dish best served cold. But the longer
mm-hmm.
he waited, you know, the more these people got worked up and ready for him, you know, even though they didn't know
mm-hmm.
he was coming, but, you know, it was like something was coming. We got to deal with all this crap, you know.
So he
made quite a few mistakes in waiting as long as he did to come back after Cain. So, yeah, it was mostly about revenge, you know. And then, you know, there was Fanny. She was thinking about, you know, her revenge on the family, the town, and mostly Veronica, you know. And, you know, and then, you know, of course, there was Brad. He had his little problems with Cain as well, you know.
Yes.
You know, and then there was Cain, you know. And, you know, and then, you know, there was Cain. He was disappointed in the way things were going. He was disappointed in the town that he felt like he didn't have much support. Then there was disappointed in Veronica to a certain extent for not talking to him. And then the main thing he was disappointed in, Mark just up and left, you know. And so, you know, he was dealing with quite a few things, you know, trying to hold it together, you know. On the surface, it might seem like, oh, he has got it all going on, you know. But Cain, you know, throughout this story, he was very tight, you know, trying to keep control, keep his emotions, you know, from flaring out, you know. But, of course, you know, when someone does that wrong thing, you're going to, you know, go off and maybe make a wrong move here and there, you know, like everybody else. So, and also, too, I was trying to show the vulnerability of these strong characters, you know, how, you know, to have a community. See, this story is based around the community. And the community, you know, in order to survive, they're going to have to learn how to get along and build each and support each other, which I think Brad, you know, when they came back to save the town, he noticed how scared everyone seemed, and then when they saw, like, the three of them together, they were like, oh, it's going to be okay now because Payne's here, Mark's here, and Brad's here, you know.
Right. You know. But then Mark left, so that left everyone a little shaky, and then everybody kept on bringing it up. It also tested their manhood when Mark left.
Right.
So that was a problem. I think what happens, and get me wrong, when you have a bunch of strong men who used to be outlaws, basically, who were in control, came in, and they all came in together and they all took over the town, it worked great. But what happens is when one of them leaves, people start to wonder, is the group still going to be able to hold them together?
Exactly. Yeah.
Are things still going to be good? What's going to happen? And when you have that, that causes mischief, and that's how people feel that they can come in and they can basically not rule, but come in and take over what you have. And I think that's what McNaby, that's what he tried to do. He figured he would come in, make his money, swindle people. He had a woman with him, Katrina,
right.
And he figured women sway men. Women talk. Excuse me, and that's when we go back to the old bedtime manner. You know, let her get to them, let her find out how much money they have. I'll bring them down to the gambling table, and we will switch, you know, we'll swindle them.
Right. And be a distraction, you know. No, and also, you know, be a distraction for whatever he's doing, and kind of cover it up a little bit, you know. You know, just, you know, kind of get in the way, you know.
Because that's what women do. Even in modern-day gambling, when you go to the casinos, you see very dressed women. Very women that look a certain way hanging around, and they're hanging around for a distraction. And so that's an old-fashioned, as you can say, it's an old-fashioned ploy. Distract you. If they distract you, nobody knows you're losing money. You're not. It's not, you know, known. When you go to the casinos, they used to have scantily clad women walking around with drinks.
Right.
Because they figured if they plow you with alcohol, you're looking at the girl that's half naked, you're really not going to pay attention to all the money you're losing. So, and that's what was not going on at Molly's. Molly was had a good establishment going on. It was a place where men could come, have a drink, and play some cards.
Right.
And, you know, we saw what happened when the saloon happened, you know, the gambling saloon opened across the street.
Yeah, the gaming house, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The gaming house, sorry. It was something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And it was exactly what Molly said was going on over there.
Right, uh-huh.
That once you have the gaming, you are going to have the prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those women would have been okay, too, if it hadn't have been for the greed.
Mm-hmm.
And you show us that so much in this book, that once you allow greed to come in, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You lose control. You lose all kind of control when greed comes in and takes over. So we see that so much. Let's talk about Katrina. She was a woman who came in. She was a distraction. Then she tried to be on her own.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like some people, I don't know, they're dingy. They're just not made for business.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want us to think it was Katrina's greed on why she had so many problems? Or it was her overconfidence
on
nothing?
No, I think she just wasn't smart enough on her own. I think it was just simply that she just wasn't smart.
I love it.
She was in the game, you know. She tried to play Gerald,
mm-hmm.
but she made the mistake. She didn't really know Gerald, you know, to
mm-hmm.
know that Gerald wasn't going to play any games with a woman, especially, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And and also I think too,
Gerald thought women were beneath him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think back to Katrina, I think one of the things that led to her downfall, too, was that she wasn't really ready to change. Kane tried to help her by, you know, getting McCabe out of town, you know, you
mm-hmm.
can go do whatever you want to do. But she let McCabe come back in and talk to her and make her feel bad. And like she said, she moved too fast trying to get stuff out of Gerald. You know, she didn't know
mm-hmm.
Gerald. She didn't do her homework, you know. So
mm-hmm.
she just wasn't ready. You know, what she should have done was, you know, lay back and watch things, you know, but
mm-hmm,
she wanted
mm-hmm.
to go for the big money. I mean,
right.
In that territory, Jared was it. You know, he was rich. You know,
mm-hmm.
he
owned the hotel.
Also, mm-hmm. Because, you know, and he liked the pretty woman around him, but he really don't relate too well to women, you know. He
mm-hmm.
don't like them, you know. You know?
No.
You know, but he needs them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like his grandmother, he needs her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He loves her to death. But
mm-hmm.
I think on the other hand, he don't like her too much either, you know, because he saw that she was kind of using him and Mark, you know,
mm-hmm.
to get the things she wants, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she was always adding, do this. The time is now, Gerald. Do it now, Gerald. You know, he's like, let me just sit here and sip my tea and think about it, you know. And she was like,
yeah.
Do it now before it's too late, you know.
You go get that woman. She's going to go back to her man. You know,
mm-hmm.
you need to go get her now. You need to do this now.
Mm-hmm.
You're sitting here letting the, you know, grass grow under your feet, and this woman's being taken away from you.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing this. You're doing that. And these things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is he was tired of it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He was tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
Janice was not complying to him the way he wanted.
Right.
His grandmother basically wanted him to just go get a wife, have
mm-hmm.
some kids, give her some grandkids, and
mm-hmm.
she felt that he would settle down and he would be a better man. And that's what they thought in those days.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but now, see, his grandmother had another agenda, though. That's what
mm-hmm.
she was letting Gerald think, see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gerald really didn't want to get married, you know.
No.
But his grandmother was saying, you need to marry Janice to get your foot in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and start a bank, and get these people in debt to you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now Daryl,
mm-hmm.
again, he's greedy, and
mm-hmm.
what and the way she phrased it fed his ego just fine. But
mm-hmm.
then later we found out, no, his, if people don't know it, his grandmother is white. No, they came from England.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what she had told Fanny. No, Fanny was like, well, how come I wasn't good enough to marry Mark? She told her, Fanny, it's not your fault. You're just too black. You know,
mm-hmm.
Mrs. Williams, she wants her family to turn back white. You
right.
know, and see, but see, she didn't tell Gerald that.
Mm-hmm.
But she told that to Fanny.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I think in the back of his mind, I think Gerald kind of knows his grandmother has her own agenda, but he don't know
right.
what it is. But she's always saying, I'm thinking about you, my darling boy, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm looking out for you.
Uh-huh. And she is, but she's also looking out for herself and thinking about her family down the line. I mean, she's a very old
exactly.
lady. And
mm-hmm.
this
so
is
she has
her last
thought.
Chance. Right. And this is her last chance to, you know, get things the way her family going the way she wants it. Because she
mm-hmm.
sees, you know, in her mind she's going, everything's changing around here. You're a big man now, but in 10, 20 years, you won't be a big man anywhere except maybe Gingerville. You know?
Right.
And so she's trying to get him positioned to where he needs to be. And, you know, and that's, you know, and that is a thing that a loving grandmother would do. But
mm-hmm.
but again, like I said, she's, you know, she's got a reason why she's so insistent why it's got to be done now.
Mm-hmm.
And Gerald, again, you know, he feels pressured.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and
because
one thing
he's
about
pressured,
Gerald,
that's why he's making mistakes.
Mm-hmm, exactly, you know. And again, he's one of these people, too, who thinks he's smarter than the average bear and all that, too, you know. So, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know. But I think the one person who knows what Gerald is about was Brad. No, Jared.
Yes.
No, Brad. He loved Janice, you know, with all his heart and all that. But he also knew that Gerald wasn't wanting her just for herself. That
mm-hmm.
it had to be something,
mm-hmm.
you know. You know. So you know. So
he
so Brad
knew
was like
Janice
even,
wasn't his type.
Right.
He knew that Janice wasn't Gerald's type. That
mm-hmm.
Janice was just a regular girl. And
mm-hmm.
Gerald really wanted, like, a real high sedity girl.
Mm-hmm.
Someone
yeah.
to look good on his arm.
Right.
And he knew. Remember, Janice was a little tomboyish.
Mm-hmm.
Gerald had put her in the kitchen to learn how to cook
mm-hmm.
and to learn how to be more ladylike.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't really. She was there because she said she wanted to open a business.
Mm-hmm.
But. And that was her reason for her and Veronica being there.
Mm-hmm.
But Gerald figured, oh, while she's here, I'll make her my wife. She'll stay. She'll never go back. She'll never
mm-hmm.
go back to Brad. So many things. But you can't have these things when you're planning on deceiving people.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, Gerald thought he was so smart, nobody else could figure it out. But
mm-hmm.
Brad saw it right away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let's talk about the love that Veronica and Kane had, but I don't know. They had so many problems, and they had so many things come in between them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a love that they can both take for granted. You know, people say that's a bad thing, taking love for granted. I don't
mm-hmm.
think so. I think you need to have that love taken for granted. You know, you shouldn't have to
mm-hmm.
worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, you should be able to say when this is over, like Kane said, you know, we're having problems now. All we can do is ride through this rush patch, get through that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we'll get back to where we need to be. You know, that's what he says in a nutshell, you know. And
I like
when
Kane said, stop talking about that we're not being together.
Right, yeah, yeah. You know, it's
some
like...
Some people would think that was possessive. I didn't think it was possessive. I thought it was like somebody telling you, I love you.
Yeah. Yeah. And he knows she loves him. So quit saying stuff that, you know, you keep saying the wrong thing. You might start thinking the wrong thing. And, you know, don't be letting that kind of energy into your relationship, you know.
Right.
And, you know, for the times, well, you know, I don't think it's just the times, but I think anyone who believes in their love, their relationships, they're going to be adamant about it. You know, when you start talking foolishly, you know, tell me I'm talking foolishly and quit it, and let's get through this patch, you know. So, no, I don't think that was him being a he-man or anything like that. I think he was just being a man who values what he's got.
Loves his woman.
You know, and
go ahead.
You know, even though, you know, he was, when Fanny stopped, you know, putting those rumors out through town about Veronica and Mark, you know, he was like, it's not true, you know, but then, you know, he was thinking, wait a minute, but, you know, they do seem special together, you know, even though it didn't occur to him or he wouldn't let it sink in that it could have been something between them.
Right.
He was thinking it might have just been feelings. And I think he might have felt, you know, because he hadn't managed to run the ranch and do the sheriffing. You know, he hadn't found a balance. He always felt like he was putting too much time in one or the other, but not enough with his, you know, with her at home. Like you said, when Veronica first met Mark, she instantly liked him. You know, he goes, you like that old bandit, don't you? You know. And she did, you know. And you know, like you said, you know, he saw that Mark was thinking she was somebody special, you know. But Mark, he might have been abandoned and outlaw, but he was also a gentleman, you know. And he saw her as his friend's wife. She's a much younger woman, you know. Mm-hmm. So he respected the boundaries, you know. But at the same time, he also saw her as a woman. And Cain knew that, you know. And Mark even admitted to himself, you know, that you know, he was feeling, you know, envious, you know, like he's not living up to his potential. So he couldn't stand for the people who loved him to see him. So he left, you know. And that was one of the things that Cain, you know, couldn't understand, like, if somebody's your partner, what the heck's he doing leaving without a word?
Right.
You know. And back in the old days, when men had partners, that was your partner. That was somebody you relied on. They was your best friend. They was everything, you know. If something happened to your woman, you would help him get his woman back, you know. You would help him do almost anything because you're partners. There was somebody who you gave all your trust to. You put it on the line for them almost as hard as when you marry somebody, you know. Because, you know, out there, you under all those life and death situations. And so a partnership was something serious, you know, and Cain took it very serious. And so, so when Mark left, you know, Cain, you know, he was left without a partner. That, like, part of him was gone, you know.
And plus, Mark was the one who helped him with that land. Because Cain didn't really know too much about the land and farming and stuff like that. And Mark knew it. And he was like, how could he leave me like this? He knows I don't know nothing about this. He knows I don't know too much, you know, stuff about it. So it's like, you know, that was a problem there. And because that was a problem, excuse me, it was the big problem. And that was a part of their problem. So you had two people who were friends, but one friend who feels he's drinking, he's not sure what he wants to do about love, he's not sure about the settling down thing, you know, and this is what you showed that we see in the Westerns, too, and we see even in real life. Mm-hmm. Sometimes men who are used to being out there and are used to doing different things are not used to settling down.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to settle down. They don't. They want a woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Yeah.
But they don't want to be stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they see it as. They see it as once you settle down with your wife, you're stuck. Here
mm-hmm.
you are stuck in this house with a whole bunch of kids, and they don't know mm-hmm. if they're ready.
Yeah. And Mark didn't
even
know.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And Mark didn't even know if he loved Fanny anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because remember when he was getting with Fanny, he was always drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And so while he was, you know, in his clear mind, he, you know, he didn't love her the way,
mm-hmm.
You know, he looked at his friends. You know, they were happy in love. You know, even Brad and James, you know, even though they kept breaking up or whatever, you know, they were still, you know, he knew James was for Brad and Brad was for James, you know. And then
mm-hmm.
he looked at Kane and Veronica. They were just solid, you know. Right
mm-hmm.
time they met, they knew it, you know. But, you know, but Janice and Brad, they're still working toward it.
Mm-hmm.
And there he was. He had that most beautiful woman he ever seen before in his life, but that was all he had, a beautiful woman, you know.
He saw that his love wasn't the same
mm-hmm.
as
yeah.
everybody else. And
yeah.
he saw something in Veronica that everyone didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And see, he saw that she was about her money, and she didn't have really her own mind.
Fanny, yeah, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about Fanny?
Yeah, Franny.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Franny. That's what he saw. He saw that she didn't have her own mind, and that mm-hmm. she was pretty much a follower. And that's why he was unsure.
Mm-hmm.
About his love for her. You know how it's something in somebody that's
mm-hmm.
wrong, but you just don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you know something is not right.
Mm-hmm.
So you say to yourself, something isn't right about this person.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but something's not right. And that's how he felt about her.
Mm-hmm. And see, and I think, you know, he had said about how Kane and Brad, when they were, you know, decide they were going to settle down in town, that they had women who made them better.
Mm-hmm.
Women or friends who made them, you know, want to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Brad, you know, he, you know, Jance was in Gingerville, and he might be the only white person there. He said, well, I'm going to be where my woman's at, you know. And so he knew what he wanted, you know, and he knew how he had to act with her. And Veronica Cole came on their first, when he first came to see her, no, the second time, that he couldn't be an outlaw and be with her.
That's
and so,
it.
You know, and but Fanny.
He had to make a choice.
Yeah, but Fanny never put her foot down. All she wanted him to do was to stay around, but she didn't say quit outlawing. She didn't say quit drinking so much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, I just want you as you are, but Mark was not his best self then, and Mark knew this.
No.
So
he was drinking, and she accepted
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah, yeah. So when he wasn't drinking, he had began to see these things, and he wanted to drink again. And
mm-hmm.
and I guess he could see he probably see and I'm thinking, you know, I didn't write it, but I'm hoping that the readers would sort of, you know, see it through the lines that how Gerald always had an aversion to her. You know, he
mm-hmm.
was like she got this affected nature. Where she get all this class from? You know, and you know,
mm-hmm.
she's just a servant and all that stuff. And you know, and she was always, like, telling Jared what he better do. Let me stay at this hotel or else, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, running off
she
with Kane in the
privileged.
First book. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, Jared, you know, he kind of saw, you know, that she's a shady character. And, again,
yeah.
all Mark saw was a beautiful lady, you know, that wanted him. But, you know, again,
mm-hmm.
that wasn't enough for him to settle
she
down.
She accepted him the way he was, but he knew he wasn't right.
Right.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to be a better man, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I imagine that in his younger life, he was a better man, you know,
mm-hmm.
or had wanted to be, you know. Yeah, so, yeah.
He wanted someone who was going to tell him, like the other women told the men, you have to straighten up your life. You have to do this. You have to do that. You
mm-hmm.
have to do all these things if you want to be with me. Not
mm-hmm.
I accept you how you are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you come to bed with me drunk. I don't care what you do. You know, I accept you as you are. He didn't want
mm-hmm.
that. He wanted someone who was going to say to him, you have to change your life. Because when people
mm-hmm.
say to you, you have to change your life, that means they care about you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
And
you know,
she didn't show her care.
Mm-mm.
She each time she just took him the way he was.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it made you wonder: did she love him, or she just loved the ideal of being a Williams? You know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you had his speech to her at the end, basically say that.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted someone to care for me. I wanted someone to love me. I wanted. And you couldn't do that, Franny.
Mm-hmm.
You had another agenda.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
Don't come to me now, you know, tell your friend to take me out of jail. We can
mm-hmm.
be a couple. We can do this. We can do that. Don't come to me now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, Mark, I wanted to straighten his character out more. You know, in the first book, he was more or less, you know, just that sidekick type guy, you know, had a little more knowledge maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But in this book, I wanted him to be more fatherly, more of a, and then, well, not fatherly,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, more like an uncle and a best friend. But
mm-hmm.
with women,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to show that he actually cared about women, you know,
mm-hmm.
Even though he had been careless in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he actually felt like everything's, Fanny did was his fault, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He came back after he found out, you know, she had called his grandmother to get hurt and stole the family jewels, and how did she even know about the family jewels in the first place, you know?
Right.
But, you know, he was like, she kept telling him, it's all your fault, Mark, it's all your fault. She kept saying that through the whole book just about, you know, when she wasn't blaming Veronica, of course. And,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was like, okay, if all you ever wanted was to marry me, let's get married. You know, he was going to do that for her, you know.
Right.
You know, and now if she had went ahead and married him, all her troubles would have been over, you know.
Yep.
That was her ticket. That was her way out of the whole situation. But, again.
Greed.
Right, you know. And so.
Greed.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And so she just. Right there, she messed it up. And the thing about it was, you know, Maureen, you know, she's the only white woman in town. But she was feeling
mm-hmm.
like, I can belong here, you know. One of her friends got murdered, you know. But she was like, you know, I'm part of this town too, you know. And
that's it.
And she was kind of marveling.
She was white,
you know,
and blonde. So
yeah.
She thought she was the it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
What
but
man
she,
could resist her?
Right, but then she saw that wasn't really the case in Gingerville, you know, and she was looking at Mark telling Franny, you know, after everything she had done, I still marry her. She was like, what? You still marry her? You know, she was impressed because, you know, nobody had ever taken care of her,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
From how McCabe met her out on the prairie, you know, she was with those two guys, you know, and they was, you know, they was making all that money off of her. And
mm-hmm.
she wasn't getting hardly any of it.
That's
so
it.
When McCabe came, you know, he got rid of her problems for her. But, again, she got let greed get in her way, you know, and she's going to, you know, right, you know.
You know what happened, and this happened with Franny and this happened with Maureen. They
mm-hmm.
got a little besides themselves, as people
mm-hmm.
would say.
Yeah.
The old folks would say they were smelling their panties.
Mm-hmm.
They started making a little bit of money. People started showing them a little bit of attention, and they thought they were better than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
They thought that they're the ones, the big money makers. But
mm-hmm.
both of them needed McCabe to
mm-hmm.
be the boss.
Mm-hmm.
Because neither one of them were smart enough to do it on their own.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's where we have the problem, when you're not smart enough. Right. Somebody else has to control the money. And, of course, the person who's going to control the money and the person who's going to do everything is going to be the one who wants most of the money. And that's how both of them missed out and didn't get what they should have and what they were worth, because they both needed men, mm-hmm. and I hate to say it, to take care of them.
Yeah. But here's the thing. In order to get rich, you know, they needed the men. But they had other examples of women who were doing it for themselves. Just right across the street was Molly and Moella and Mabel. Yeah. You know, they were three women who they were all friends, and they were taking care of each other, looking out for each other. You know, they were part of the town, and, you know, they didn't need a man. For Kane said, no, you don't need a man except you need me to come in here and shoot somebody, you know. But that
was
about
it,
you know.
The only thing they needed men for was for security.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then you saw how, you know, these women also, they could take care of themselves. Even old Mrs. Applegate, you know, she stood up to McCabe, you know, when he come in there, you know, terrorizing everybody. She said, let me put these kids to bed, for goodness sakes, you know. You know, put the gun all into her face and stuff, you know. And she wasn't acting all scared. You know, she was crying over the kids being terrorized and maybe somebody getting hurt. But she wasn't scared. He goes, are you afraid of me? And she goes, no. Well, you know I can kill you all the same, right? You know, she was like, yeah, but let me put them kids to bed, you know.
Yeah,
and,
let me put these kids to bed and we could talk as adults.
Yeah, and then, you know, he starts, you know, and while he had the town on lockdown in the hotel, who was he terrorizing mostly? Women.
Right.
And he was about to lose his crazy mind when he shot Molly. He did that because I think he didn't have the guts to straight out shoot him. You know, he'd already killed one woman and caught hell for it from that old guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was kind of like, what's wrong? And he was like, what's wrong with these people? Don't they know they ought to be scared of me that I don't give a damn? I'd kill you. And he would. But for some reason, I guess that wasn't part of his plan at that moment, you know. And so I think
really think he was a killer. I think he was just a slender.
No, he was a killer. Remember how he got when he went and got Maureen, he killed Lonnie and of course they had called him a nigger and all that and insulted him left and right,
him,
you know.
Don't you touch her with your dark hands.
Yeah,
that's what
you know,
set him off.
And he was a capable gunman too, not as well as, you know, the other guys, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
McCabe had a few things going on for him. And now when he shot the one woman, I don't want to say who she was, when he shot her, he hadn't really planned on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It more or less just happened. And once it happened, he really, you know, like he said, he wasn't going to lose no sleep on it. It's a shame, but I ain't going to lose no sleep over it, you know? But, I think he...
Because he didn't really care for women either. He didn't really care for her as a person.
Mm-mm. And that's why Mark said, you're not going to get away with what you did to Fanny. And he did use Fanny. You know, he wanted, see, Fanny, she's the perfect type. She was smart to a certain extent. She wanted revenge just like he did, and she was greedy. So so they connected on that level. And I think in his heart he knew Fanny wasn't going to stay with him. And Fanny wasn't.
Yeah.
That's why he got so mad when Katrina laughed at him when
Fanny
he was in love with Fanny and she was
true
blue. Huh?
Fanny is with whoever makes things go good for her.
Yeah.
She is an opportunist, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
She goes for people who are just about her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have a caller on the line.
Okay.
Whew, I didn't even know.
Oh,
you know,
right.
I was thinking the show started at 2:30. And then I was thinking, we got another half an hour. And then I hear the thing coming in 90 seconds. We just chatting. Hold on.
Okay.
Hi, 965.
Oh,
you're
hey
on the line. Hi.
Hey.
You're on the
line
with
Arthur
Hall.
Big fan. Yeah, I'm a big fan. I absolutely love their work. I just want to say, I think you both need to shut the fuck up.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. I think.
About what?
No, I think that's a prank call.
Oh, okay.
So I just got rid of it.
Oh, okay.
I think it was a prank call.
I was getting ready to say something.
Somebody told me that it happened. And another radio host asked me, did I ever get prank calls? And I was like, no, I never got prank calls. And they said, yeah, you be careful because you can get them. Because when you put the show out, it goes all over Blog Talk. So you get, like, creeps who call in and want to. I guess that's why some shows have, like, screeners.
Okay. Well, you know,
That's my first one. Sorry.
Yeah. I was getting excited there for a minute, you know.
You was getting ready to defend your book.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was going to say something like, we didn't know what the heck we were talking about in regard to men or the old West or whatever, you know. I was going to, you know, deal with him.
No. It's just somebody who's bored and has a lot of time on their hands.
Yeah. Well, but you know what? I did get a caller. Okay. That's cool.
That's
I'm
going to
look at that.
I don't care what you say about me. Just spell my name right.
Yeah.
But, yes, we have – I want to let the audience know that you are not new to this. You have been writing for a while, and you will be back next week. I forgot what you told me we're reading next week. But you have Cheap Red Wine, Fine Lines, Fairlight, the Fairlight novels, book 1, 2, and 3, Into Deep, Once an Outlaw, More Than a Feeling, Heart of an Outlaw is what we're talking about tonight, this afternoon. This is the Outlaw book number 2. I'm going to ask you, is there going to be a number 3?
Yes,
Scarlet.
In the words.
Just to See Him Again. I loved that book.
Mm-hmm.
Just Like My Coffee, that was a classic. We covered that last week.
Mm-hmm.
My Heart Always Knew, Come Into the Light, the Fairlight book number 3.
Mm-hmm.
You also have Light of the Moon, the Fairlight book, the Fairlight novel book number 2. Magic Moons, loved that one. Into Deep, I loved that one. Sunburn, and we have The Age of 42. And 3 days. What would you like us to read next week?
I think My Heart Always Knew.
My Heart Always Knew? Okay.
Yeah, because you, Cheap Red Wine is a bit long. My Heart Always Knew is just a novella, so that'd be
a novella. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great. What are you working on now?
Oh, my gosh. Right now, I'm trying to concentrate on Return of an Outlaw. That's part 3 of my Outlaw series.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be kind of wild on different levels, I think. So it's taken me a while to finally get it together. That's my main focus right now is part 3.
Mm-hmm. Will we have some more historical facts? Will we have different things that we will be going, I wonder if this is fact or fiction from the author?
Mm-hmm. Okay, now what I'm I base everything on facts that I can find. Now I might take a little poetic license here and there, for the storyline. But basically, if someone is disputing it, they'll see that it's based in fact.
I believe
you
it.
Know.
I believe it.
You know, I might even have some I've been throwing this around in my mind, having historical actual people showing up in my novels. Like, I don't know, maybe Bass Reeves will show up or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I can, you know, make sure I get my, you know, my timeline straight, you know, because the fact that Bass Reeves only lost one person he was after, never captured him or brought him in. I'm thinking of that person that Bass Reeves could not get. He eluded Bass Reeves, you know, and maybe he'll end up in Gingerville. You know, I'm thinking about stuff like that, you know. you know, and if anybody knows anything about Bass Reese, you know, I mean, I don't want to sit there and, you know, give you a history lesson, you know, saying this, you know, this and that, you know, but I'm going to just mention facts, you know, maybe a few, you know, some facts, and if you and you want to look it up and find out more about it, you know, that's the best way, you know, in my opinion, you know, rather than, you know, slow the story down with so many facts about historical places and people, you know. You can mention them. I mean, like, if when I read about Dodge City or Tombstone, if I want to know more about Dodge City or Tombstone, I say, okay, that's a, that's, that was a real town. I'm going to go look it up and see if this stuff really happened, you know. And I think, you know, when you write a historical novel, it should have some kind of historical facts that can back up a little bit the times and what you're writing about.
No, I think that is great, and I think that you are giving us something. Even if, you know, even if authors write historical novel and they write about the Old West and there's no facts in there, you're still giving us something to believe in, and you're still giving us something that we don't have. And we don't have a lot of love stories back in those days. You know, I tell people all the time, I will read historicals, and I will read historicals by white authors, but I will not read historicals by white authors where they say she had slaves, but she treated her slaves well. I will not read that.
Yeah.
And there was a book. I was in a book club, and it was everyone, all different colors, and we read books all different colors, and I dropped out of the book club that I was in because they were reading, they were doing American history. And the first book we read was had historical facts, and it had slaves in it, but it just didn't have slave owners, but you knew the slave owners were there. And then the second book had the slave owners. And one of the ladies had read it before, and she said, oh, but Jeanette, she treated the slaves well. And I politely just said, oh, okay. And then I sent my little email saying that I was no longer going to be able to fit into my scheduled book club, because I knew the book discussion on that book was going to be fire. And we were meeting, it was a library book club, and I didn't want it. You know, I'm not a radical. Because one of my friends was like, oh, you should have stayed and you should have challenged. Why? They voted on the book. It's obvious other people didn't find anything wrong with it. I'm not that person.
I'm similar in that way. If I don't like the subject matter, I'm not going to read it, you know. People get mad at me, you know, because I don't like to go watch movies where black people are mistreated. I know it's a historical fact and all that, but I do not like watching slave pictures where a slave don't have any kind of a choice, no kind of a life. I know that was the reality a lot of the times, but I don't have to watch it. It just kills me.
You know what? And that's so true. I have not been to see any of the slave movies that are in the theater. I do watch the show Underground because I watched it in the beginning, and all of the slaves there are not. They're rising. They're going ahead. They're doing different things. But those other slave movies, Once a Slave and all those slave movies, I'm not going to see that.
Yeah, it just kills me, you know. If I don't feel like there's going to be any uplifting moment, it just bothers me. And people go, oh, well, you need to watch that. I said, I got history books, you know. I don't need to watch that stuff sensationalized and people getting rich off of it, you know. And that's just how I feel.
It makes you depressed because you have to go back in the world. And you have to, well, I know me, I have to go back to work. And I have to work with my people. And I can't look at them thinking about this and about that. And I can't.
I try not to
do it.
You know, in my stories, I try not to, I have an instance where, at the beginning of the story, McCabe, you know, encountered those two guys who insulted him. Then, again, at the end of the story where he was playing a card game and this guy lost his money and wanted to call him a dressed-up monkey or something, you know. And but, you know, he was in that saloon, he wasn't in a black community. He was in a saloon owned by white people playing cards. You know,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that is a historical fact. I mean, even though the law might say black people don't have the right to come in here, but there are places where you could go in, you know.
Right.
If nobody acted a fool or challenged it, you know, and sometimes if somebody did act a fool or challenge, the owner would say, you get yourself out, I can have whoever I want in here, you know. But and that was such a place. And wherever Mark went, he always found a hotel. You know, and all
mm-hmm.
these towns weren't black communities, you know.
Right.
And you know, the reality is that their black people knew how to live and where to go and how to get along, you know, and kind of assimilate to a certain point, you know. And but, you know, a lot of those movies, they just have it everywhere you go, everything you do, you know,
mm-hmm.
24 hours a day. That's all you're getting. You know, and that's not really the reality, you know.
Exactly.
You know, depends on where you were, of course, you know. But, you know, you read, I mean, people are always ready to say, read your history. And I want to tell them, you read your history. Because, you know, you just got one-sided. You're going with one thing you heard. You know, it makes me wonder. People who always
mm-hmm.
want to say that,
mm-hmm.
they're the ones who haven't read their history or understand
exactly.
it, you know. Let me get off my soapbox or whatever. So,
no, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So, I did have one person on my website on my Gingerville page asking me, was this based in reality?
Mm-hmm.
And I almost didn't even reply because I'm like, haven't you heard of black communities? Haven't you heard of black outlaws? You know,
right.
And so to ask me, how is this based on reality? You know, I'm like, it's as much reality as Little House on the Prairie or Bonanza or anything else you've watched. You know what I'm saying? You know, or Red, you know.
I love it. Yes.
I mean, it's fiction, but, you know, it's based on reality, you know. And because, you know, I mean, how are you going to write anything properly if you don't have a basis? I mean, unless you're writing what they call it, fantasy.
Exactly.
Then, you know, right. Yeah.
Is it based on it? You were right. You mm-hmm. know what? That's why you don't even entertain it.
Right.
Like that caller. I didn't even entertain it.
Mm-hmm.
The minute he
yeah.
said, I was just like, it's done. You're gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know. Because he wanted someone to argue with him. He wanted
mm-hmm.
to, what are you calling the show for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
Actually, if you entertain foolishness, you have
foolishness.
See, at first I thought he was going to come back with, you know, sort of make it funny or something, you know
mm-hmm.
after he said shut the, you know, up. I thought he
mm-hmm.
was going to, you know, say something like, oh, hey, ladies, how y'all doing? I'm blah, 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 you know, just fooling around or whatever. But, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You did right. It was
mm-hmm.
ridiculous.
Well, I want to thank you. I want to say I'll talk to you next Saturday.
Okay.
We'll chat about what time. I want to thank the people who are listening this afternoon who are fans of Sandra Hall or fans of my show and discovering Sandra Hall's books. You will enjoy them. And they're a great, now that we're in the wintertime, they are a great way to spend your day.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, author Sandra Hall. Go ahead.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure to be here.
I enjoy it. I'm going to just keep on inviting you on until I read all your books.
Okay.
And then you're just going to keep on writing, and then we're going to be done.
All righty.
Okay, thank you so much.
I had fun. Thank you so much.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was getting ready to hang up. I'm sorry. Thank
no,
you so
you
much,
you
and I really
fun.
Enjoyed myself today.
I
Y'all
did,
have a
too.
Good one.
You too. And we're going to go out with I Choose You. And I felt that that song at the end really explains Cain and Veronica. Because they love each other. It's just that sometimes love goes through a little struggle.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.